gardening tips on Basingstoke Community Radio with the garden editor, Claire.
Claire's here today, and we haven't spoke to Claire for something that feels like for ages. How are you, Claire? All right?
I'm very well. Good morning. Good morning. It feels a really long time since we've spoken, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? It does. It feels like months and months and months, but it's only been a couple of weeks as normal, really.
It has. I think we just missed one session while holidays happened.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we all need a holiday, don't we?
Yeah. And you were busy telling me, if you don't mind me saying so, about your lovely holiday, which sounded really nice.
That's right, yeah. Made chocolate and everything. It was very good, yeah. So I've eaten it, though.
Oh, well, I think that's required, isn't it?
It was only three bars, so that's all right. And that was over 2 weeks ago, so that was all right.
Yeah, that's practically nothing.
So what are we talking about today then, Claire?
Well, it's a bit linked to holidays, actually, because I thought what we could talk a bit about is climate resilience in plants and our changing climate and what climate change means for what plants are doing well and what aren't doing well.
Okay.
Because I don't know about you, but I really rarely see this big yellow thing in the sky at the moment. There's a lot of this rain around the place.
Yeah, I don't know where our sun's gone.
No, it really hasn't. And in some ways, that's great for our gardens because, you know, things are looking very lush. And, you know, if people have got lawns, they're not looking biscuity brown. They're actually still really green. And we haven't had a hose pipe ban. But it just got me thinking that this time last year in our gardens, it was about 40 degrees. It was getting super, super hot.
Yeah,
and
it was.
So, so dry. We hadn't had like a proper downpour in months. So we had that really hot, last year was the hottest year we'd had on record. And then last winter, if you remember, then we were freezing our bones off because it was really super cold. And we had those really, really long cold days where we just get a temperature above zero. And then, well, spring happened and it went really dry, the driest February for about 30 years, I think. And then the wettest March for 40 years. So I feel like we're living in more extreme weather conditions, and we know that's linked to climate change. It doesn't mean that every single year is going to be the same, but we know we kind of expect this greater variation in our weather patterns. It's not just kind of nice linear, oh, every month is going to be half a degree warmer than it was before. So these mad things that we think are a bit mad, like bonkers amounts of rain in the summer in really sudden big downpours, might become more normal.
Well, because, I mean, the weekend just gone, towards the end of last week, in the weekend, we had Storm Betty, wasn't it? So we've had a lot of storms go past us recently.
Yes. And we've had lots of changing weather because of where the weather patterns are sitting over North Africa, and whether that's dragging up very, very hot winds into the south of Mediterranean, which is why we're seeing extremely high temperatures in that part of the world. But then bizarrely, that's kind of suppressing the normal average temperatures that we're seeing in the UK. So it's all a really different weather pattern. But what has that done to our plants? Well, a lot of them, well, not a lot of them, but quite a few plants that people have had for years and years and years, maybe even decades, just haven't survived or aren't thriving after this 12 months of kind of really major stress events that they've gone through. And certainly in the spring, I think there was a whole litany of people going through plant grief. Is that a thing? Plant grief? Do you think you go through plant grief, Dave?
Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah, and people had plants that they'd, you know, had for years or decades, or they might have been given it by a late family relative. And suddenly these plants, which had survived for years, just couldn't cope with the amount of heat stress, drought stress, and then huge amounts of cold and wet that the climate has put them through. So I thought what we could do today is talk a bit about how to find out what's a resilient plant, and my kind of top plants that I've seen not only have kind of survived, but have actually thrived in the climate that we've been, the weather we've been experiencing the last 12 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first thing that people ask, they say, oh, is this a really hardy plant? I want to make sure it's hardy. It's going to get through the winter. So we think about the temperature level. And normally plants are rated whether or not they can survive negative temperatures. And some plants just can't. We just have them in as indoor house plants, or plants like bedding plants for the summer. We just have them in the summer because we know they can't cope when the temperature drops below 10 degrees C. Sorry, Dave, I've just realised I can only talk in Celsius. I don't know Fahrenheit.
It's all right, that's what I work in, don't worry. Old school. We're old school. It's us old school, isn't it?
No, No, that's new school.
Is it though? New school? Oh, well, I do old school. You just carry on. I can. Yeah, it's fine.
But anyway, we can give it. But there's a whole kind of guide to hardiness, and people tend to think of the plants as hardy if they can survive temperatures below -5 degrees, so below freezing. And the ones which are kind of borderline tender are the ones which kind of bat the ghost about 1 or 2 degrees or frost on the cusp of when we get these frosts. And that's a really good starting point for working out what's going to cope with the cold. It doesn't tell us a complete answer because temperatures can vary so much in a small area, even within your own garden, depending on where the sun comes, where there might be buildings which could cause tunnels of wind to kind of have windier spots in your gardens. Parts of your garden which might be close by your house, so might be a bit warmer, might have less rain falling on them because the roof is overlapping them. There can be a huge amount of variation in a really small space, which means that just thinking, oh, well, you know, we're in Hampshire, how likely is it we'll have temperatures below 5 degrees? Nah, not very much. So, yeah, things will survive. I'm going to pause here because you were telling me a really interesting story about your holiday, about the temperature variation, which I think might illustrate this quite nicely.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sorry. So you were up on.
We was up in the mountains, yeah. And yeah. One day it was 37.5 degrees, but if you went down the beach, which was a half hour drive away, it was another. It was 41.6, I think.
Wow.
So that was quite a huge difference.
That's a real difference, isn't it? That isn't just a small amount. No. That would show a huge amount of variation just within, you know, okay, a bus ride, half an hour. But even within where I live at the top of a hill, and I know if I walk down the hill in winter, I'm near a river and I can feel it. It's just more dense, it's more moist in the air, and the temperature drops a degree or two, definitely, just within, you know, a couple of hundred metres.
Yeah.
So we can feel that. And if we can feel that, plants are really sensitive to those types of temperature variations. And like us, they can't walk if the temperature doesn't work for them or the situation. They can't get up, you know, wiggle their bottoms out of their pots or the ground and go elsewhere. They stay where they are and they either die or live, broadly speaking. So we have to think not only about the temperature, but the other conditions. So, for example, plants in pots are really good things for container gardening. I'm a big fan of because it makes it so much easier and much more accessible. It means much less mess and faff. But with plants in pots, it means that your plants are basically surrounded on 3 or 4 sides by the elements. Yes, you've got the pot and some soil, but compared to that plant being in the ground where it's surrounded by literally all the earth and the kind of the warmer soil, if you've got a plant in a pot, it's likely to dry out more. And it's likely if there's a frost or a really cold spell, it's likely to suffer more damage. So there's plants like Agapanthus, which are really big and showy. And they love being in pots. They really like it. But so many people lost Agapanthus over the winter because the rain and the cold penetrated into those root balls and those pots and basically froze them and killed them from the inside out.
And I suppose because the weather is really changeable and it's changeable at the moment, literally from day to day, isn't it? So, yes. For example, this morning it was quite chilly. Well, it wasn't cold, but it was chilly. But then come up past 9, it sort of warmed up a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was on Friday, it was pouring with rain and I was going out to work with a client and we were going to do a big plant out of plants. I said, let's wait an hour and see what happens. And by mid-afternoon, the sun was out and, you know, we were stripping off the layers and taking off all the waterproofs. Mm. It's a huge amount of variation that we're dealing with. And that's where I think thinking about what works well in your garden and what works well in your neighbour's garden is such a good trick because there's so many variable factors. A climate resilient plant is one which is doing well now. If it's managed to survive the last 12 months of stress, so the drought of last summer, cold of last winter, and then this bonkers amount of rain and wet and change that we've had in the summer, then in my book, that plant is a climate resilient plant where it is right now. So I know it sounds a bit simplistic, but we can look at the guides and I'll talk about my top 5 plants in a minute. But there's nothing like knowing what grows in your area to find out, OK, what's going to work for me and my garden, bearing in mind how high it is, what the rainfall is like, what the sun is, what the type of soil I've got and all those type of things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Is there a plant that's out there that's fits all situation?
Well, yeah. So I'm going to start with my top five plants.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I think we can do. Should we do this in reverse order?
Yeah. Let's do that. Yeah, we'll do it in reverse order.
Lovely. So last one on the line, I'm going to come up with lavender. Now, lavender really likes a bit of hot and normally doesn't cope well with a lot of wet and rain. But where we are in North Hampshire, a lot of us garden on really chalky, poor soil. And actually, that's what lavender likes. So as long as your soil is free draining, by which it means that if you pour a can of water over it, it doesn't all stay and go boggy and mushy. Lavender is proving quite resilient to the conditions we have here, so much that west of Basingstoke there's quite a big lavender farm with lots and lots of fields of lavender, which look really, really pretty. So although it's flowered a bit later this year, it's been doing its socks off, so I think that is one definitely to keep. So keep your lavenders and go with more of those.
I bet that smells quite nice over there then.
It does. And actually, it's nearly time to start harvesting your lavender. So maybe the next episode or two, we can talk a bit about lavender and how to keep it looking good.
So do they sort of learn different seasons within themselves?
Well, a lot of the science is kind of inbuilt into the plants. So some plants only start to flower when the days get shorter.
All right.
And that's called, hypertropism, I think that's the word for it.
Wow. I won't even try to write that one down.
I think that's how it is. My apologies if someone's screaming at their radio and I'm going, no, it's not there. So plants respond to light and to temperature. They don't read labels. They don't learn that way. But the botany within them, the science within them, and the different hormones prompt them to do different things at different time, whether that's to go into reproductive mode, or to grow towards light or away from light, or to open flowers. Genetically, what we can do is we develop new plants, we can cross two different plants together to see if we can get the best of two different features of those plants. And that's a lot of the way in which plant breeders develop more climate resistant or you know, more pest free or more beautiful spurring plants or whatever it is. So a bit of genetics and a bit of science as well behind that.
Did you say plant breeders?
Yes.
Well, I never knew that.
That's
a thing. I never knew that there was such a thing.
Oh, yeah. It's a really, really highly scientific and really skilled industry of people selecting the best types of different plants and kind of cross-fertilising them together and seeing what happens as a result. So
wow.
That's why some plants have particular names in kind of in italics. Or things like that, because that's been protected. That plant is almost like it's been intellectually protected, like a brand. That's why certain plants have that epithet attached to them.
Bit like Dolly the sheep, isn't it?
It's a form of cloning. It's a form of reproduction. It's a form of kind of selecting what we want the best or the strongest fruit, or you know, all those type of different factors we can take into account.
Okay, right. So we've done lavender. Number five, then.
Yeah. Number five. So number four on my list, honeysuckle. Lorna serenicida, if you want to be posh and Latin about it. But honeysuckle is a climber which grows quite vigorously and then produces lots of lovely deep scented flowers followed by berries. It produces green leaves. It's great for the birds later on in the seasons because they love the seeds and the scent is delightful. The one thing that people find with it sometimes is you can get quite a few aphids, like greenfly, on them. But to be honest, the ladybirds and other things hoover those up pretty much in no time. It's as tough as old boots. You can chop it down really hard in the winter and it grows back again. And it's one of those plants which copes with a lot of water and it copes with a little amount of water, it seems to me. So I think that's one of my survivor thriver plants of the last 12 months. It's got a really sweet smell.
Yeah, it would have, yeah, honeysuckle, yeah.
Yeah, and it's lovely in the evening. So if you ever want someone which is going to smell nice in the evening while you're sipping something cool and refreshing, it's a top plant for that.
What, out in the cold garden?
Because
as much as we might have sunshine, come the evening, it gets too cold, doesn't it, really?
But then remember June, it was really hot. It was the hottest June on record.
It's
all sorts of times, isn't it? So that's my plant number
four. Right.
Okay, so top three we're coming up here.
Yeah.
So my third one is gonna, I'm not gonna give the really long name, but if people are interested, there's an article on my website about it. But it's called an aster or a Michaelmas daisy. And like you were asking a bit earlier about what plants do plants know what to do or kind of how do they learn what to do? These are daisy-like flowers which open only in kind of September or October, really. They learn that they only flower when the days start to become shorter than a certain amount of hours of daylight per day. And they cope, they're North American in origin, but they are proving to be real contenders for our gardens over here because they can cope with the very big temperature fluctuations that you get in the middle of kind of the prairies in North America. Plus, they are coping with our wet weather because they tend to flower towards the end of the summer and into autumn. So they've got a long time to grow and to kind of cope with periods of stress and drought, in which case you might just pause a bit. They're not yet in flower in my garden, probably got another couple of weeks to go, but I think they've produced lots of really good foliage and really good growth. So I'm putting them in as my speculative number three. They're really sweet. They're like tiny little daisies. You can get them in pinks and in purples and whites. So that's the aster or the Michaelmas daisy, as we call them.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So coming up to the top two, a lot of people really like plants called salvias. Salvias are kind of have this lovely woody, blackcurranty smell. And some of them are super, super hardy, and others are not really climate resilient at all, and are pretty much will only ever last one season. So, if that's you and you like salvias, but you think, oh, they might not make it through the winter, my top replacement for those is something called Nepeta or catmint. And these look and behave a bit like a salvia, so they have very fine silver leaves, which help deal with moisture loss and help with the hot temperatures. But they produce purple or blue flower spikes in the beginning of the summer, so kind of May, June time. And then you cut them all down, and then they come again this time of year. And so they're a really lovely cottage garden plant. So they like it sunny, they can cope with the wet over winter, it seems. And they are far more able to cope with the cold temperatures than the salvias that we see around the place. Do you have a cat, Dave?
No, dog.
Well, a dog, yeah. So the one thing to watch out with catmint is it's what is in catnip.
Oh,
So, you
really?
know,
I'd say go a bit
yeah.
nuts for it, didn't they?
So some particular ones, and depending on the type of Nepeta and the type of catmint and the type of cat that you have, they can go a little bit loopy. And you know, some cats kind of try and lie down and roll in them.
That's right. Yeah. You don't want to put too many of them in your garden because you get up one morning and all the cats are just rolling all over your plants and that. They're
Well,
going all loopy, aren't they?
there's particular Nepetas which are much more upright and resilient and much more able to cope with that, and others ones where, you know, my cats aren't bothered by catmint at all, whereas previous ones have gone absolutely loopy. So it's a bit of a, you know, do take that with a pinch of salt. But some of them, it's a beautiful, beautiful plant, and the bees and the pollinators absolutely love them. So they completely hum all over it. It's really great for bumblebees because it's got a nice open source, open scented flower, so it can really get in there and do their work. So, and then lovely foliage the rest of the year. So nice, kind of silver grey colour, almost like a mint. As you know, it's related to the mint family. Though don't eat the leaves. Leave that to the cats. The mint in your G&T. And give a cat mint to any stray cat who you want to make a fuss off. That would be my top tip.
Right, now to finish off then today, because time is creeping up on us. Come to number one then. What's your number one plant?
So my number one plant is a geranium. So these are the hardy geraniums, so not the annual ones we put in the containers,
Yeah.
but geraniums which will go in shade, they will go in sun, they will go in dryness, they will go in moisture. There is a geranium for every single situation under the sun. And I have seen them sail through this last 12 months in all sorts of circumstances. I've got them planted up everywhere in different places. There's thousands of them. So there is definitely a geranium for you. They've been in this country for hundreds and hundreds of years. So they're showing that they can cope with our conditions, they can cope with the changes. They are cheap as chips, and they are great because once you buy one, you clump up, you can divide them and get more plants for free. So my top spot is the geranium.
Excellent. Right. Okay. So we've done the top five plants then. Now, before you go, I need to know what song you've picked. I know what song you picked, but I've not worked out the connection there. Is there a connection?
There is a connection. So my song is Joni Mitchell, Big Yellow Taxi, because talking about paving paradise and putting up a parking lot is all about the impact we have on our climate, and these plants are all climate resilient plants. So I thought there was a bit of a connection there, but maybe...
Well done. Well done. Yeah, I'm impressed with that. Perfect.
I just think also it's a really banging track, and I absolutely love the track
of the week. Right, okay, we're going to play that now then for you. And we'll see you in not next week, the week after. And you can tell us all about because you told me that you're volunteering somewhere really special, aren't you?
I am, and we're going to find a way in which I can tell you all about that next time. But yeah. Thanks very much, and Dave, lovely to see you again.
Thank you very much, and enjoy your new volunteering role in a different climate.
Thank you, and I'm going to enjoy my track.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks you. Speak to you soon.
Gardening tips on Basingstoke Community Radio.